Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
3 days into the assault in Marja, Afghanistan.
Clear as many compounds as possible and push up.
All right. That's what I was saying. Hey, they could be trying to draw our attention to that side anyways.
Thousands of NATO and Afghan forces making a slow, determined push, expanding the area under their control, turning back attacks from insurgents they describe as desperate.
I think it's going very well. I think it's only day two. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but we're optimistic that we're on timeline, maybe a little bit ahead of timeline.
Small fights in fields of alfalfa and opium, step by slow step across irrigation canals and dusty roads. The Marja offensive continues. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's President's Day, Monday, February 15th. The takeaway for me is Todd Zwillick, Brigadier General Nary Nicholson. We just heard him there being very cautiously optimistic. And you have to wonder, could it be that the cautious optimism is justified? We're going to find out.
A couple of more days to go in this offensive before we have any real data on that. Let's get right to the top stories we're following this morning. As we've just been hearing, day three in the Battle of Marja in Afghanistan.
Clear as many compounds as possible and push up.
U.S. Marine and Afghan units press deeper into the city, facing sporadic rocket and mortar fire and keeping a watchful eye out for IEDs or improvised explosive devices. It's a perilous slog for the soldiers. One report says it takes 9 hours to clear a single mile in Marja. Yesterday, the offensive suffered a setback when an errant American missile hit a compound crowded with civilians, killing at least 12 there. General Stanley McChrystal apologized to the Afghan president for the incident.
Our partner, the BBC, is reporting from Afghanistan this morning that the threat of IEDs is worse than NATO commanders anticipated and has slowed the offensive. The BBC's security correspondent Frank Gardner is at NATO headquarters in Kandahar, southern Afghanistan.
Taliban insurgents have planted even greater numbers than predicted, slowing the advance of U.S. forces in the area around Marja. Those insurgents that have chosen to stay and fight are believed to be concentrated in Marja. The assessment of NATO intelligence officers is that insurgent resistance to Operation Mushtarak is disjointed and in pockets. They believe the Taliban may be holding off from launching attacks for the next few days while they wait to see if NATO and its Afghan government allies are staying or leaving.
Pentagon numbers show the use of IEDs has more than doubled from a year ago.
Meanwhile, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says Iran is drifting towards a military dictatorship. Speaking in Qatar this morning, she says sanctions are needed against particular elements in Iranian society.
Those enterprises controlled by the Revolutionary Guard, which we believe is in effect supplanting the government of Iran.
Now, later today, Secretary Clinton heads to Saudi Arabia, where she's expected to press for more international pressure on China to impose sanctions on Iran.
The U.S. military is scaling back its aid to Haiti. About 13,000 troops now remain on or near the island. That's down from 20,000 2 weeks ago. And the Port-au-Prince airport will reopen to commercial flights on Friday. Every Roman Catholic bishop from Ireland will meet with the Pope one-on-one in the Vatican today. Bishop John Duffy, a spokesman for the Irish Bishops Conference, said Ireland's bishops will tell the Pope what they knew and did about clergy sex abuse.
I think the casualty in all of this has been the truth, and we do accept that the fullness of truth must come out. Everything must be laid on the table.
An investigation last year showed church leaders in Ireland spent decades protecting child abuse priests from the law. Looking at the markets, Asian markets are down, European indices are up, Wall Street markets are closed for President's Day. And we're going to be talking later in the show about autism. Health studies often contradict each other. What are the facts, separating facts from fiction in autism?
We're also following the Winter Olympics all morning, which got off to a sad start when a loser died during practice on Friday. We're looking for your takeaway. Are the Winter Olympics getting too fast or too extreme, too dangerous? That's 8778-MY-TAKE, or post it to our website, thetakeaway.org. Just a few minutes, we get an update on the assault in Marja in Afghanistan. That's coming up.
Do Good morning. I'm Celeste Headley, but this is not John Hockenberry. Todd Zwillick is filling in for John all this week. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Celeste.
We have the latest details coming out of Afghanistan. U.S., British, and Afghan forces have begun day three of the assault on the Taliban stronghold in Marja in the Helmand province in the southern part of the country. And for the latest details, we turn to Jean McKenzie. She's a correspondent for the Global Post in Kabul, Afghanistan. She's been getting news from her reporters out in the field in Helmand province. Jean, what are the latest details on the offensive?
Well, we're hearing that the Taliban are winding down a bit on their defense, on their resistance. Although the spokesperson is saying that the Taliban will resist to the end, that they're not going to let the foreign and Afghan forces into Marja. They obviously cannot hold out for very long against a force of 15,000 troops. But they have surrounded the area with mines. We're hearing up to 70,000 IEDs or improvised explosive devices have been laid in and around Marja, which is a fairly limited district. It's not a large area.
We've been hearing that the NATO and Afghan forces are moving very, very slowly. Is that because they're coming up against any more IEDs than they expected?
Absolutely. We heard from one doctor inside Marja that just 200 meters in front of his house, he had seen the Taliban laying 35 mines that were interconnected. So that can do quite a bit of damage to a force that encounters them. They're going to have to move very, very slowly because with a very long run-up to this operation, the Taliban have had ample time to put down their weapons, to put down the IEDs.
Also with us this morning is Jeffrey Dressler. He's an expert on Afghanistan at the Institute for the Study of War. He focuses in particular on military strategy. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning.
I wanted you to listen to this particular clip of tape from Lieutenant Ryan Engel. He's with the Lima Company.
3-6, Lima Company. We came into the northwest area of Marja and took this intersection of the canals. It was limited resistance, much less, no real resistance, much less than was expected. But we did find several IEDs and bombs and things like that.
Why are we experiencing less resistance than expected in Marja?
Well, I actually don't think that it's a surprise to people who are familiar with the operations that the Taliban have mounted in the past. They typically do not confront a large-scale military force head-on. What they do is exactly what you're seeing. It's a lot of asymmetric hit-and-run attacks, primarily with IEDs and mines. And so this is really much very much in character for what we've seen in the past. And I think that you know, as I heard you mention earlier, that certainly is going to account for the pace, the slow pace of the operation for the Marines and Afghan troops.
Jeffrey, address the 12 Afghan civilians were killed by an American rocket strike that missed its intended target yesterday. The whole purpose, the military had said, of publicizing this in advance was to, number one, get civilians to safe haven if they possibly could, and to allow the Taliban to cross over. So what does this rocket strike that killed 12 civilians, how does that hurt this offensive?
Well, I mean, there's no question that it's always a tragic event whenever innocent lives are lost. It's my understanding that what happened was it was a malfunction in the rocket technology that caused it to misfire and kind of go off target, and it struck a civilian compound. And I think the reports coming out are suggesting between 10 and 12 civilians were killed. And so, you know, obviously they've tried to do everything that they can to prevent civilian casualties, and that absolutely has been the number one concern, and I know that they'll continue to operate that way. Unfortunately, sometimes when you have that much combat power in a very small area, sometimes things like this can happen. But it's definitely going to be incumbent upon the tribal elders and the newly appointed district leaders who are going to go in shortly to explain to the population, okay, you know, here's what we're here to do. This is why we launched the operation, and we are here to bring you things that you want. And so hopefully they'll be understanding in that regard.
Jean McKenzie, have you heard any response from the, in terms of what the civilian response are to these casualties? I know that the United States has apologized to Hamid Karzai. What are the people of Afghanistan saying?
Well, of course, there's going to be a very angry reaction to this. No matter what the excuses are, you cannot expect that you're going to be able to conduct an operation of this size without civilian casualties. No matter how hard you try, accidents are going to happen. Bombs are going to land on the wrong houses, or rockets, as we see, have gone off course. But in addition to the outright civilian casualties, we've heard that up to 900 families, and that would be numbered in the thousands, 4,000 or 5,000 people, are now displaced. They're on the move. They're going to Las Cargas. They have no shelter. They have no food. This is also causing quite a negative reaction from the people of Helmand.
Jean McKenzie, this is Todd Zwillick here. What concern are you hearing from the troops if they're encountering light resistance at this point, that the Taliban have simply melted into Pakistan and will come back to fight another day when it's more advantageous for them?
I think, of course, that is a concern. They don't necessarily have to have melted into Pakistan. Much more likely, they are melting back into the population. It's very difficult to tell a Taliban from a farmer from a shopkeeper. So chances are that they will just lay down their arms. They will wait for things to calm down, and then they will start, as Jeffrey Dressler pointed out, asymmetric warfare against the troops once they have stopped the active offensive.
Jeffrey Dressler, I wanted to play for you this clip from NATO spokesman Mark Sedwill.
I can't yet say how long it will take for this military phase to get to the point where we can bring in the civilian support from the Afghan government. We hope that will happen quickly.
So we assume this offensive, as we said, is going to be slow and steady. But when it finishes, Janitor Stanley McClistro said we're bringing in government in a box. Is that going to be the hardest part of this? Is what comes after they've secured the territory?
I think that's going to be really the marker of success here, not necessarily the military phase, but what these local governance elements, really the Afghan face that needs to be on this operation, come in and what they're able to accomplish. And so I think that we'll look to that over the coming months to see exactly how this thing's going to play out. The good news is we've done this before, even as recent as the past 6 to 9 months, and so we do have experience in that respect. So that's absolutely correct.
Okay, Jeffrey Dressler is an Afghanistan expert at the Institute for the Study of War. He focuses on military strategy, especially in the Helmand province, which is where the Marja offensive is going on now. Jean McKenzie is a correspondent for the Global Post. She joined us from Kabul, Afghanistan. Thanks to both of you. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Let's check in now on the headlines.
There's been a major train crash in Belgium today. Nearly 20 people have died after a head-on collision between two commuter trains in Brussels. There was no word on the cause of the crash, which happened during the morning rush hour. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is traveling to Saudi Arabia today. She wants the Saudi rulers to help persuade the Chinese to take a tougher stand against Iran over its nuclear program. Secretary Clinton spoke earlier in Qatar.
If the Iranian government wants the respect of the international community, it must respect the rights of its own people.
Battling each other on the airwaves yesterday on the Sunday show is Vice President Joe Biden and former Vice President Dick Cheney. He's criticizing the Obama administration's counterterrorism efforts while ignoring what the Bush administration did.
The Christmas Day bomber was treated the exact way that he suggested that the shoe bomber was treated. Absolutely the same way. Under the Bush administration, there were three trials in military courts. Two of those people are now walking the streets.
That's the current vice president criticizing the former vice president on ABC's This Week. Dick Cheney said that all terrorist attacks must be treated as an act of war and that all options, including waterboarding, must be available to interrogators.
Eric Holder, for example, the attorney general, who still insists on thinking of terror attacks against the United States as criminal acts as opposed to acts of war.
A new twist in the child trafficking scandal in Haiti. The Dominican man who's acting as legal advisor to the 10 jailed Americans is accused of running an international sex trafficking ring. And an arrest warrant was issued for him on Saturday. That's a look at some of the stories that we're watching this morning.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.